Financial inclusion is about creating pathways for farmers to transform subsistence into prosperity. It is about ensuring that no farmer is left behind because they lack collateral or formal income records. When a farmer can borrow affordably, insure against losses, and invest in better inputs, they can break free from subsistence farming and enter a path of sustainable wealth creation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In my presentation, I'll be looking at cattle as the tool that can bridge the gap between finance and agriculture. This isn't just because I'm here representing TN Livestock, but also because livestock keeping hedges against poverty. In many developing countries, especially as the demand for animal products such as milk and meat continues to rise. Additionally, cattle have represented wealth in Africa, yet this culturally significant symbol of wealth is not formally recognized in our institutions unless it's being disposed of. So unless people are slaughtering or selling, their cattle, the value of their cattle is not being recognized. Using cattle as a bridge for financial inclusion is our way of decolonizing wealth in Africa. All right, so I want us to pay attention to that. I hope it's at least a little bit clear. That first pie chart over there, because it's very heavy on stats, and I'll try to go through them in a way that is comprehensive. So in an article published by Newsday in Good Time, so thank you for that. In an article published by Newsday, we saw that about 66% of households in Zimbabwe do not own any cattle, and only 12% own more than five animals. And let's break it down. 66%, 12%, they sound almost arbitrary because we cannot visualize them. So what we're saying is that in a country where we have almost 4 million households, about 1.4 million households own cattle, and less than 500,000 households own more than five cows. And let's make this specific to the rural communities that I'm addressing in this presentation. Rural communities make up 67% of the population and own up to 90% of the cattle. So in that statistic of 1.4 million households owning cattle, majority of them are in rural communities. But then let's assess wealth in Zimbabwe. When we think about wealthy communities, do our minds go to rural communities? Yet they are the largest shareholder when it comes to cattle ownership. They own 90% of the cows in Zimbabwe. Yet they do not represent wealth in Zimbabwe, not even a little bit, not even slightly. They are marginalized and they are excluded from financial sectors, even though they own this symbol of wealth. And I know, okay, it sounds impressive to say 90%. It sounds like a lot of cows, but let's break it down even further. In Zimbabwe, we're about 16.6 million. The rural population is about 7 million people, and they own 5.1 million of the 5.7 million cattle that make up the national herd. Zimbabwe does not have enough cows, and the ownership of cows, even if it's majority in the rural community, they don't own enough of those cattle. And I think Zimbabwe can do better. So in my presentation, and as I talk about TN Livestock Trust, I'm going to try to address, firstly, the issue of the rural community accessing wealth through their cattle, and also people building their herd, or at least creating a herd, so we can positively contribute to the national herd. If we look down here, the map of Zimbabwe, we'll see the upper part is kind of highlighted in red. I've highlighted Mashona and West, Manicaland, Mash Central, and Mash East. In these provinces, we have people who own the least amount of cattle, or the least amount of people who own cattle. Harare, that's where we are. Those who are from Harare, we're amongst the people in this country who don't own cattle. Statistically speaking, less than 30% of the people up there own cattle. And then for those who actually do own cattle, pasture availability is low, quality of the pastures is low, and well, rated merely fair, which means that if you do own cows, you may not have access to good pastures. And if you do have access to pastures, the quality of the feed that the cattle is having is quite poor, which affects the national herd quality and value. if your cow is a poor quality cow, it's not going to have a good value. So even if we push for rural communities to own cattle, where are they going to graze? How are they going to feed them? How are they going to take care of these cows? Those are also other issues because they affect the value of the asset that they are holding. So you see that hungry looking cow eating its own tail. That's the case. You know, we go around into the market when we do our deposit mobilization. We go around to farms and most farmers, we can't take on their herds or we can't allow them to deposit because all their cows are of poor quality. So it's about improving the quality of the herd or creating mechanisms where people are empowered enough to improve the quality of their herd so that they can recognize the true value. And then the final chart over there, it shows the disparities in the prices of cattle in the market, not in the market, but in communities. So prices can be below $200, with some selling their cow at $190, or slightly above $500, with some selling at $509. But then the market value of cows right now is over $750. But rural communities are not recognizing the market value of their cows. You know, I'm glad that my dad is not here because I have an example that involves him. Last year, one of my cousins, she got married. She had her Rora. And in our family, contrary to what many may believe, we're not too picky or fussy about the procedure. So they gave my sister the leeway, carte blanche, to put what she wanted on that Rora list. And then the dads would just say, okay, ngawi. And then, yeah, we're not formal. And so she wrote down her Rora list. The day came, it passed, everything was done. But my dad came to me with the list at the end of everything, when everything was done. And he said, actually, I'm okay with everything here. But do you see down here where it says danga? Those not familiar with the procedures of Rora, danga represents the cows that the family is going to give to the bride's family. And he said, ukanditra zvakadaiso, zvirinani kuti ndikuendese mahara. Than for you to do this, because we'd say danga, it wasn't the quantity of cows, it was the value she had ascribed to those cows. She had said $250 per head. And Mr. Nyambrai said, okay, $250 cooking. And this is Ashley. Because he was looking at the market value. But I wanted to say to him, $250. That's community value cattle. But it's not market value. Meaning people who are in the industry do not have access to the market. Our vision for TNLT is to convert cattle into a new bankable asset class against whose deposit tradable financial instruments can be issued to facilitate investment, trade, and commerce. The realization of our vision will see a significant growth in the incomes of rural cattle farmers beyond $4,000 per annum in any cattle farming household thereby helping the country attain its vision 2030 goal of becoming an upper middle class income country by 2030. Our mission is to create secure cattle depositories that will take cattle deposits from rural farming communities against certificates of deposit that the depositors can use to mobilize cattle, conduct trade, and preserve value. TNLT will also be a platform for investors to acquire secure and high growth commercial assets that will be a derivative of the cattle in the cattle depositories. Cattle owners can now deposit their cows. Maybe if we look at the model. So this is how the model operates. Again, it's a visual. Cattle owners can now deposit their livestock in special breeding facilities where the livestock will be under the husbandry of experts. The depositors of livestock are then issued with a negotiable certificate of deposit that has a face value and can earn a return and act as proof of deposit at TNLT. All details such as the customer name, cattle class deposited, as well as terms and conditions of the deposit are also shown on the certificate. These certificates can be used as collateral for loans, that thus ushering in a new era of access to capital by the rural community that was hitherto unbanked and unbankable. You know, when I think about being unbanked and being unbankable, I think about when I was growing up. I never, ever in my life until I went to university thought about opening a bank account. I never needed. I never had enough money coming in that I needed to put it somewhere that wasn't under my pillow or in my drawer. because the idea of opening a bank account seemed to be something that you did when you had enough money coming in to that you had to put it in a secure place. Many people in rural communities, I am seeing the CEO of CyberTech in here. Many of the people in rural communities don't have bank accounts because they're like Ashley when she was a child. I have no need. I don't have a place to put the money that I'm getting or generating. I don't have, it's not enough for me to need a secret location or a secondary location to place it. When I get it, I use it immediately or within the immediate future. It doesn't need to go somewhere else. But when we create an asset where farmers can access loans or credit to fund projects, then they need to open a bank account. Because when they deposit their cattle, we ask them, where are we sending the money? Where are we putting the money? Where are people making payments for this project that you have taken up? So this group of people that was previously unbanked or unbankable start to think about banking and become bankable because now they have an asset that has value. At the bottom here, we have the investor. Here we can have farmers. So with the bottom model, we are addressing the statistic of people not owning cattle. We said only a third of the population own cattle. So to address that issue, we have farmers and members of the rural communities who can buy into the program, either individually or in groups, by pooling funds together and making their payments to TN Asset Management, which is one of the top three asset management firms in Zimbabwe in terms of assets under management with Old Mutual and CBZ. Through TN Asset Management, TN Livestock Trust will then secure or allocate cattle to the investor. So if you have no expertise, you have no land that you can farm on, but you still want to own cattle, if you're part of that statistic that does not own cattle, then you can come in with cash and then we'll allocate cattle to you. And then the same terms and conditions will apply. We'll issue you with a certificate of deposit and then you can watch your herd grow. Speaking of which, let's go through the process for the depositor. So I've spoken about how there is a depositor, a farmer who comes in with cattle, and then an investor, someone who doesn't have cattle and cannot take care of cattle or wants cattle, but doesn't have the time to farm and comes in with cash. So if you come in with cattle, we'll send you a notice. We're coming to your farm. We're going to assess your herd, and then we will then arrange collection. We will come to the farm. We will inspect the cows that are there. So our inspection, we're checking for diseases, condition of the animal, and verifying ownership, making sure that people don't deposit stolen cattle. Then we'll grade your cattle in the presence of a vet and independent valuator. And then we will transport your cattle to our cattle depositories. And then we'll issue you with a certificate of deposit. And then once that procedure is done on our farm, we'll then, amongst the cattle that you have deposited, we will select those who are going to be put aside for breeding and then those that are going to be fattened and sold. And then with that certificate of deposit, you can access loans. If you're an investor and you're coming in with cash, you're telling me, you know what, Ash, right now I'm still working. Eventually, when I retire, I want to retire with a herd, maybe get into farming because that's where our roots are. Maybe you're young and there's a piece of land that you know belongs to your family that was left by your grandfather. Nothing is happening right now. Nothing can happen right now. But you want to make sure that when something can happen, you have something to put on that farm. You can come in with your cash. You sign in your mandate form, create a portfolio with TN Asset Management. You transfer the cash, you deposit your cash. Then we acquire and allocate the cattle, give you a certificate of deposit, and then annually you receive reports. Why we say annually, for those who may not know about cows, cows breed once a year. They're pregnant for 9 months and then they breed. So I know people are used to quarterly reports when it comes to their investments, but for cattle we do annual reports because that's the only time that your investment will change. Let's talk about the benefits of investing in cattle. Wait, before we get to that, actually, let's go into a bit more detail about how the model is going to operate. So for both types of clients, the depositor and the investor, like I've mentioned, a certificate of deposit will be issued in their name. This certificate is bankable is a bankable, tradable asset, which allows these small-scale farmers and members of rural communities to access a formal, to access formal banking services, because they can use their cattle to access loans, build assets, and engage in income-generating projects. Their herd will grow at a guaranteed calving rate of 30% per annum, which is consistent with communal farmers. For example, if you have 10 cattle, they will breed 3 calves per annum. The return on investment will be based on this calving rate, and TNLT carries all the costs of keeping the cattle. So after the initial deposit, there's no annual subs that you have to pay to keep the cattle. We carry that entire cost. You will be insured from loss by our proprietary herd, which will be no less than 25% of total deposits at any given time. This is where banking comes in. In a past life, I did a master's in law, and I specialize in global financial law. And a big part of international standards for banking resolution was for all banks to have at least a minimum capital threshold that they maintain in the bank that they cannot trade in case something happens. And it is about a 25%. I don't know if that's still the international standard, but this is where banking comes in, merges with our cattle banking platform. So typically, when we begin the investment, we begin with heifers, because they are productive. The allocation, unless you come in as a depositor, if you come in as a depositor, you can deposit either heifers or steers. We don't take bulls, for those who are wondering. The allocation of calves born during the investment period will be 40% heifers and 60% steers, which aligns with our birth statistics as observed over the last 10 years. So although TNLT is only making waves now, we've been around for the last 10 years, since 2012. The reason we've been quiet is because we wanted to make sure the model works. And now that we are certain that it works, now that we have clients that have come in, claimed cattle or cash or both, and we have delivered, we know that what we are promising you is real and it's attainable. And you can imagine, as a Zimbabwean, from 2012 until now, what has happened with our economy? What has happened in our country? Yet, those who invested in cattle still got something out of it, exactly what we had promised them. So when your heifers reach 2 years, they will join the breeding herd. That's when the compounding effect takes place. So the heifers that are born in the first year, by the end of the third year, they're now 2 years old. They join the breeding herd, meaning starting from the fourth year, the investment starts to compound as your breeding herd grows. So that 30% will still apply, but it's now applying to a bigger herd. The investment term is 5 years, so you invest for a minimum of 5 years. The longer you invest, the more that compounding effect takes place and the larger your herd will grow. And at the end of the investment period, you have the choice to either roll over, to withdraw the herd, or the cash value of the herd, or a mixture of both. Most people who withdraw heifers and then get their steers in cash. Now we can go to the benefits. These are the benefits for the depositor, those who bring in cattle. Financial inclusion, this is their bridge to accessing the financial sector. High interest return, because that, like I said, the interest rate is based on a 30% calving rate. Increased productivity of their cattle. Inclusion, insulation against loss of livestock. So because we cover and we carry the loss, farmers don't have to worry about any disaster striking their herd, because we have their herd, we're keeping their herd under the ownership of experts, and we insure against loss. Availability of grazing land. So because we've taken the cattle, farmers who are still farming other livestock like goats, sheep, etc., they will have more grazing land available because the biggest consumers have been taken out of the picture and are now being taken care of in our feedlots. And savings on upkeep costs. So now they can access savings. They can even start a pension. I know a few people who invest with the intention of funding their children's education in about 20 years. Some of them are investing with the intention of retiring in about 35 years. So it's a good way for people in these communities, or anyone actually, to have an almost sure thing for when they choose to retire or when they need to make big financial decisions. The benefits for the investors, those who come in with cash, diversification. So I dabble a little bit in the pension funds market because I sit as a principal officer on a board of trustees. And something that I've noticed that happens with that, that's a major concern for pension funds, is that they don't have other assets to invest in. Most of them are property heavy, which is, I think it was over 54% of the portfolios of pension funds are in property. Property is good. It's secure. It's illiquid. Meaning, yeah, you can have the property, but how are you going to dispose of that property? It's not that easy and it takes a while. And pensioners, some die waiting for property to be disposed of so that they can get money from their pension. So that diversification, investing in an asset like cattle, which is like property, but then is more liquid and is more secure, or at least less risk. It's more risk averse than I would say the stock market, especially right now. It gives people an avenue, especially pension funds or pensioners. It gives them a means to invest in something else besides the usual investment classes. Tangible asset ownership. So like I said, it has that effect of property where you can say, there, that's my cow. Like you can say, there, that's my house. Steady income and wealth creation. So you can start small. If you invest in two cows, in 5 years, you have a herd of five. If every year you invest in two cows, every year you put together $1,500, two cows. Next year, $1,500, two cows. In 5 years, you have a herd of five. Then on the sixth year, another herd of five. On the seventh year, another herd of five. So your herd continues to grow as you invest, and it's just in two cows per year. And those with bigger pockets can invest in more, and obviously you'll see more of that return. It's a hedge against inflation. Like I said, we had people who invested in around 2013 who then withdrew their investment in 2023. And despite the changes that happened in Zimbabwe during that time, they still managed to withdraw the cattle that they invested in, or the cash value that is expected or that was prevailing in the market at the time of withdrawal. Professional management and expertise. And minimal risk, not no risk. So please, not no risk, minimal risk. There's no investment that has no risk. So when you ask me questions, low risk. We try to mitigate as many risks as possible, but with any investment, there will be some risks. And then the benefit for Zimbabwe. Increasing the national herd by increasing the cows that are there, and also how many people own cattle. Employment of the rural communities. Where we set up our farms, that's where we employ people from. So we have a farm in Featherstone. We employ people from Featherstone. We have a farm in Gweru. We employ people from Gweru. We have a farm in Lomboshawa, and we employ people from Lomboshawa. So as we grow our portfolio and increase our herd, we increase the employment of Zimbabweans, but also the people who are depositing cattle and starting projects in their rural communities, they can also create employment with the people around them because they're starting new projects because they have access to credit. It addresses the problem of overgrazing. Cattle mortality rate reduction. Proud to say that as TNLT, our mortality rate has stayed below 2% for the last over 10 years of operation. Improves the quality of life. When people have access to credit, to money, and they can start projects, the quality of life improves. And reduction in child labor. As we know, most of the people who are that are herding the cattle, that are taking care of livestock, are children. And some of them are being pulled out of school to do it. And some of them can't go to school because there's nobody else to take on this labor. When we take the cattle and we keep them, and then we pump wealth into rural communities, children don't have to work anymore, and they have access to a better education, or at least to some education. And then the thing that most skeptical people were thinking about throughout this whole presentation: risks and mitigants. So the first risk we have is disease incident. So how we mitigate that risk at TNLT is firstly through diversification. So the diversification of livestock, which means that within our herds, we have different breeds of animals or different mixes of breeds, because some breeds are more susceptible to some illnesses and some are not. And to create an environment where diseases don't spread and wipe out a herd, we have that diversity. So we breed with different types of bulls that bring forth different offspring. And then the diversification within the livestock. So within the same breeds, there's also diversification. If you guys have gone Kumusha, I've gone to rural communities, you see they have one bull, many cows. And for generations, all those cows are breeding with one bull. There is no diversity within the livestock, and that creates risks. For those who remember O-level biology like I do, what happens is that recessive genes start to become more and more dominant in incidence of inbreeding. So we diversify our herds to make sure that each generation has a different lineage. And lastly, geographical diversification. So I talked about how we have farms in different geographical locations. That's so that when incidents do occur, when there is an outbreak in the Chivu area, we know that the Gweru herd is safe. And as we try to mitigate the risk for the herd in Featherstone, we know that, look, if anything happens, we have the cows here that can act as insurance for that herd. The second thing that we do is implementing robust biosecurity measures. Third thing is maintaining a comprehensive dipping and vaccination regime. And we work very closely with vets and the local government to make sure that we're compliant and to make sure that we are aware of any risks or any issues or anything that could affect the quality of our herd. The second risk is theft, which can be mitigated by fencing, access controls. All our farms have only one access point. And in doing that, we make sure that anyone who comes into the farm is seen by security. So security is also mobile, so they go everywhere on the farm, either on bikes or bicycles, CCTV, and then should theft occur, we cover that loss ourselves. In case everything here doesn't work and your cow still ends up missing, we cover that loss with our proprietary herd. Cattle might not be able to give birth. We mitigate that risk with culling. If we find that a cow is not productive, after 2 months of running with bulls, we have it assessed by a vet. And then if we see that, okay, there are issues, we cull it, meaning we take it for fattening, and then we sell it and replace it. Banking on stolen cattle, like I mentioned earlier, when we come in to do our assessments, we make sure that all the cows that are coming in that we're either purchasing or that are being deposited are legitimately owned by the people who are selling them to us or depositing them. And we involve the police in this. Loss of your certificate of deposit. We keep a copy of the certificate, and then we also offer custodial services for those who have nowhere to put it. And when you want to see or access your certificate, you just present your ID and then you can access your certificate. And then death. We guarantee against death with our proprietary herd. What we say is, zenyu hazibiwe, zedu ndizo dzinobiwa, zenyu hazirware, zedu ndizo dzinorwara, and zenyu hazife, zedu ndizo dzinofa. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley. That was, wow, a proper masterclass in converting cattle into real assets. You said you kept the model behind the scenes whilst you're perfecting it. What were the lessons that you got from this dry run of some sort?
Okay, so a key lesson, I think one of the major ones is ownership upfront. I've seen people try to get into cattle banking and their first port of call is to say, give us, you know, deposit this amount and then you own cattle eventually. That model doesn't work. The headache that goes into keeping cattle and keeping a herd alive and keeping it productive is too much for you to have a promise of a cow, because you'll find that when the time comes to deliver on that promise, there's no cow. Mm. So we had to develop a model that emphasized ownership upfront. And we learned a lot about feed. Feed is very expensive in the market, and it is actually the biggest driver to the profitability of your farm. So because we're trying to merge the financial and the agriculture, we don't have the luxury of spending 49 cents per kg on feed. We had to make our own feed, come up with a good recipe for feed so that our
I was going to ask profit. That knowing TN, are you now producing your own feed?
You know, that's what it is. You know, when we're doing bread, we made our own premix.
Yeah.
Doing cows, we make our own feed and we keep the cost below 2 cents a kg.
But still you have to buy the, do you grow your own crops?
What do
you
do? We do cropping. So we grow grasses and crops.
Okay.
And then what we do buy are things that we can't grow, things like molasses and other such ingredients.
Okay. How significant part is that now part of the business?
It's half of it.
It's half of
so
it.
Half of it is cattle, and then the other half is cropping.
Okay.
The two have to work together for the product, for the model to work.
I suspect that you might have, and I might be wrong, and correct me if I am, that you might have come across a cultural headwind of people, you know, we want to see our cattle in a cattle corral. But when you've taken them away, somewhere else has become something else. Did you experience that at all? I'm thinking of peasant farmers in Matabele Land, in Gokwe, Nambudzia, wherever it is. Has that been a problem?
Yes, it has. So in 2019, something happened in this country. And we sent out messages to a lot of the depositors and we told them, look, we don't know what the future of Zimbabwe is going to be. So this is a good time for you guys to come and withdraw your deposits or get the cash value of your deposits. And then there are farmers who, a lot of farmers came in and they withdrew. But then we had a few that held their investment. Unfortunately, at the same time as these economic changes are happening, there was also an outbreak of foot and mouth in most of Zimbabwe. Most of the people who withdrew or who never deposited lost a lot of their cows. But then there are those who kept their deposits. And so that bridge that we had where we had to try to explain that, no, your cows will be there. You can come and see them at any time because we have that option. You can come and see them. But people want to see the wealth, just like people want to see their money, which is why they don't invest. So they want to see their wealth. But then after that incident happened, the farmers that kept, that held their investment, they then withdrew 2023 around that time. And when they were withdrawing their investment, they were going back with a herd of 30 plus cows to those communities that had lost their entire herds to disease. And that created an easier conversation with those communities. Mm. So now when we go out, we have those examples and we say, look, do you remember what happened in 2019? Everyone lost their cows, and every Zimbabwean who owns cows has that memory.
Has that memory.
And so that has, unfortunately, disaster has created an avenue for us to reach those customers.
What about the regulatory framework? You obviously come in with this innovative idea. The terrain is not set up for that product that you're coming with, the business model. Talk to us about that.
Okay, so you're pulling me back to my past life. Like I said, I specialize in global financial law. And one of the things I was interested in was obviously financial regulation and supervision. I can say be almost certain to say there isn't regulation right now that addresses cattle banking. So our model, as we work on it, will sometime in the future inform the regulation. What we then do is we merge the financial regulation with regulation in agriculture and also, like you saw, some regulation in banking to create the perfect merge to make sure that we are being guided by some higher power somewhere. Because we know you don't want to take lead and exercise too much freedom and liberty with this new concept. You want to make sure that when laws do come in, we're not disadvantaged in an extreme way. So we do pull in guidelines from different regulatory bodies. But right now, as it stands, there is no, at least as far as I know, there is no regulation.
So the risk of the absence of regulation has not stopped you developing this model?
No, not yet. To be fair, how the model functions right now, because it's consistent with other laws, at least we know that we are somewhat covered if regulation does come in.
Talking for myself, as you're talking there, I'm impressed by what you're doing, but you still didn't get through to me to persuade me that if I had cattle, I should do this. Do you face that kind of challenge?
Yes. Our biggest opposition are people, expert farmers, because they're saying, Ashley, you're telling me about a guaranteed calving rate of 30%. My cows, they give birth every year. I have 100%, 80% calving rate. Why should I invest? Our platform is not necessarily about our ability to keep cattle better than you. It is about you accessing the financial sector by depositing your cattle to us. So we're not coming here and saying that, look, we are better experts than you who know your herd. We're saying that, yes, you have your herd, but every time something happens, you're selling your cows or you're slaughtering them. Instead of doing that, bring your cows to us, those ones that you want to sell or slaughter, deposit them. They will grow, maybe less than they would grow in your custody. But if they were in your custody, they'll be dead or gone. So we're saying you still have that ownership, and then take out a loan on that value and then do what it is you wanted to do when you were thinking of selling or slaughtering your herd.
And why don't you take bulls?
We have our own bulls because we take pedigree bulls. We're trying to perfect our breeding. So with a lot of communities, their bulls could be a mixed breed, which is unclear. We don't know what characteristics our cows will be getting. So we purchase pedigree bulls with evidence and with the correct certificates and their history, so that when we breed, we know, okay, we're breeding with a Thuli, and we are breeding a hard Mashona type with a Thuli to breed out some of the characteristics that we don't like in hard Mashona types, like they're small, they calve late, things like that. And then from Thuli, then we breed with a Brahman because we want the size, and obviously everybody loves a Brahman.
What's your biggest breed at the moment?
Right now we have a mixed breed mixed with Thuli.
Okay.
And then we have a separate herd, which is just pure Brahman, which breed with the other Brahman bulls.
Okay. There's a question there. Yes, my brother, I can see people getting the confidence to ask questions about cattle now.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the clear presentation. I think you are one of the few people who have been able to try to convince me to invest in cattle. Because I'm coming from a background where I come from a village where the village have made a decision that this cattle thing we can't. So I'm happy your presentation was able to clarify where I realized that we were missing as a village in terms of expertise, in terms of managing the risks. Now I'm coming, my question is, looking at myself as an investor, I am holding on to cash and deciding whether I go to Zimbabwe Stock Exchange or to VIC4 for Stock Exchange or to keep the money in the under the pillow. Do you allow us access to the farm before we invest, just to have a look? Just to have a look.
Okay, good.
Yes, 100%. So we allow farm visits. You can come onto the farm. You can see what we have going on. We've had a lot of clients who are like, we need to make sure, one, that the cows are there. Two, the condition that the cows are being managed under. And three, just that security of knowing that, okay, this is the place that I can come to visit my yard. So you can come and you can check out the farms. We have two farms that will be closer depending on where you're coming from. So we have our farm in Featherstone, which I usually take depositors to. And then we have our farm in Marvel, which is mostly short hauled. So it's for fattening. So you mostly come across steers and you'll see our feed mobilization efforts more clearly there. And then you'll see bigger steers that are being fattened and ready for slaughter.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you managed to get through to somebody who's got cattle, unlike me, who doesn't have cattle. Another hand, Madame, your nick has gone somewhere else. Okay. Sharp questions, please. So we are running out of time, as always. 5 minutes to go.
Thank you, Ashley, and well done. Very inspiring. But my question is, how are you working with the Reserve Bank credit registry to help especially the smallholder farmers to be able to eventually access broader financial products beyond cattle-backed financing, especially for those farmers, because they don't know how to do this to register their cattle? And Reserve Bank is making so much noise about the credit registry. You, as people who understand better, how are you helping those smallholder farmers?
Thank you so much for that question. Yeah.
Right now, we don't have any initiatives to that effect, but it's not something that that's completely out of the picture for us. Our focus right now is on scaling up so that we can then venture into other aspects of financing, of credit, and also of farming. So right now we don't have an initiative, but then it's not something that we are not considering. It's just something that right now it's not feasible yet.
Okay. There's a question up front there, Unique. There's the lady. Please identify yourself, where you're from, so that we also use this opportunity to get to know you. Yes, ma'am?
All right. Thank you. Adia and Michelle from the World Food Program.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much for that presentation. It actually got me very excited. So you find that as the World Food Program, we do what we call resilience programs or programming. And one of our key pillars actually touches on livestock production. So we have smallholder farmers that we actually work with, and they're actually into cattle production. I think you have been privy to the what we call the ZIMLAC, which is a report that is actually done on yearly basis by government and development practitioners that actually tells you what the country looks like in terms of food security. And one of the things that came out in the 2023-2024 report was, because of the drought, we actually had a high cattle deaths, especially in Matabeleland. And we also have most of our farmers, that's where they are. And in our programming, this is something that I'm also thinking, just sitting here as you actually presenting, to say, do you access, do you actually able to go down to the rural areas of Zimbabwe and then have conversations with those farmers that we have access to so that they can actually buy into the idea? That's number one. Maybe mobile clinics, something to say, because it would be good to have this kind of product available. Because I'm looking at a situation in some districts, we had cattle death as much as 1,000. Mm. 1,000 in a village or a group of villages, that's quite a lot.
Yeah.
And we're looking at food security. Food security is just not your vegetables, your crop. It also involves livestock. So if you could answer on that one, if that is actually possible. And then the second one, I think you partially answered it, concerning the breed. You talked about the Thuli and the Brahman. But most of our farmers is the hard mashona. That's what they have. I will tell you that they can come and then say, but we only have the Mashona breed. How can you then improve it so that by the end of the 5 years or the 10 years, when I then go back to you guys and say, can I have my deposit back? It has actually improved. Mm-hmm. How to then convince the farmer? At the same time, the very last one is linked to the last one. Sorry. It's to do. So in our programming as well, we do what we call value chain analysis. Mm-hmm. You talked about what we call from the farm part of it. Mm-hmm. What about other projects? In the urban space, we work with urban farmers where they're now into leather production. They've actually regulated, they're actually trading. Is that something that you're also thinking about, where we then can say, let's link the smallholder farmers, the way they can then have access to this leather products from you, or the actual animal skin, so that they can then produce the products that they can then export?
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for that question, for those questions. Right, you got them?
Yeah. Okay, and I hope I remember and answer them correctly. So the first question was about our deposit mobilization efforts. So our deposit mobilization efforts center around those rural communities, the faraway places that people can't get to, because those are the farmers that we intended to target when 10LT was started in 2012. It was for their sake. It was to bank the unbankable, and those are the unbankable. So we do have initiatives every now and again where we go out into those rural communities and we meet with them and we talk to them, offering them advice if they have herds on how to improve the quality of their herd, and then offering 10LT as a resource, saying you can come in and deposit your herd with us, and then we can take care of your herd for you. So we tell and communicate with farmers that the herd that you're depositing will not be the herd that you withdraw. With our calving and breeding practices, we make sure, especially hard mashona type, we breed out unfavorable characteristics and then breed in characteristics that are more favorable. And so when you get your certificate of deposit, it will say what breed the cow is, but it will also have other value depicting characteristics. So it will talk about its weight, its age, and its gender, which contributes to how it's going to be evaluated. So that at the point of withdrawal, after the at maturity, the farmer will then see, okay, I initially invested these 10 cows. Yes, these are this is the interest that I've gained, but the initial 10 cows, we will match the characteristic traits, that determine value, having excluded the other traits that we know that are going to make your herd less valuable. So we will change. The breed quality will change over that 5-year period. That's why it's set at 5 years, because we need enough time to breed a better herd by the time farmers come in to withdraw. And I think the last question was about other aspects of livestock, not just the cattle, but what about leather? What about other products that they can get from it? So right now we only do beef. So we're not yet in dairy or whatever as TNLT. We only do the beef. So we sell the beef. But then when farmers come in and they want to kind of grow and start a business and they deposit their cows with us, they can come in, I think, through TN Asset Management, which they've done in the past, with their business ideas. Then we'll help them construct a good business idea and then secure the loan to then venture out and do what they want to do with their business so that they can service the loan over time. So we will give that advice and we will help with the financing. But then right now we have not ventured into other products that come from beef, that come from cows.
Wonderful. That's all the time we have. Ashley was so clear. Thank you for the clarity. Very, very clear. We've surfaced a number of issues that people might wish to engage with Ashley. You're around here for a while, isn't it? She's here the whole time. So let's take full advantage of her. Wonderful to have the World Food Program here engaging. I know you've got farmers out there. So there's a lot of takeoff points for conversations. So thank you so much, Ashley. Thank you very much.
Thank you.